Sahanavavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahaviryankaravavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 4, Adhikarana 5. Bhagavan is the objective of all Vedic knowledge. Okay. So I said before, this, the types of Shruti statements. This is what is said. There are two types of statements in the Shruti indicating the Lord. Those dealing with the three gunas and those devoid of the gunas. Right. So then, yeah. So here, this explains how the Shrutis serve the Lord by playing with the Sarup Shakti. Atmana charataha. In this way, the activities of the Shrutis have been explained. The Nirguna statements directly serve the Lord by their nature. Statements dealing with the three gunas serve by indicating the Lord only, in order to negate Maya. Its gunas are described. All right, so you're describing Maya just to get rid of the concept of Maya. It's like our illusion about Maya. So that we see it in comparison to the Lord, and so we see the Lord's position and how then we should be serving the Lord. So that's the idea. Because otherwise, when you're talking about Krishna and his Sarup Shakti pastimes beyond the material world, or the Nirguna aspects, then there's no need to describe the modes of nature. Right? You just show the devotion, you show the taste, you show all those different things that the devotees are and the Lord are experiencing and exchanging. That's all that needs to be done. But when you're in the material world, then you have to show the modes, because we don't necessarily notice that we're under the modes. That's the whole point of the modes. Yes. We don't notice like that. Later, Maya is completely rejected and the qualities of the Lord's Sarup are directly indicated. So they'll always go through. That's why you see in here that they'll be talking about the Lord. Then they'll go into all these different things, how he creates and how he's Brahman and this and that. Then all that will be moved on. And then they'll go back to showing the Lord directly. Yes. Right? So it's a natural thing, because as we saw, is when you introduce something, you're going to introduce something in a way that you overall say what it's about. Right? Like the essence of the whole thing. Having said that, then you're going to describe the various components that make up this topic. Right? Then you're going to describe the details of the topic. Right? So, that's why you'll see at the beginning of the chapter, then there'll be something indicating the Lord. Then you'll get into details according to whatever kind of how you're approaching the subject matter. So it'll have certain subsections and all that. So all those subsections will be mentioned. Right? Then you're going to deal directly with the Lord again. So that naturally will be then how the literatures are presented. And because they're presented like that, then some people get bewildered. Now, who gets bewildered? Right? Who gets bewildered are generally those who are intellectual. And why do they get bewildered? Because they are thinking according to their own senses, their own perceptions, and their own values. And so, even though they'll always consider, because they're thinking and analyzing, that they're more objective than anybody else, no, they may be open or aware of a wider range of knowledge or not, Or even if it's a narrower range, but they contemplate it generally, seemingly more than others, right? Or at least their contemplation, you would say, would be more just kind of analytical, how you say, let's say, you know, in modern terms, let's say pure analytics. In other words, it has absolutely no practical value, right? You know, that's their idea of it's pure. You know, but everything you do has to be practically applied. So then, yeah, you could do all kinds of things. You know, it's just like if I want to analyze how to keep this pot, I could keep it upside down. I could keep it on one side, the other side. I could balance it on the tip of the pot here. But all of these, except for this one, will be useless for it being a water pot. But they are ways that you actually could speculate. So because that's a taste, putting it all that way, you say like this and the other guy, no, hey, we could do like this, you know, hey, what if we just stack them up like this and not like that, oh, hey, we could put this one this way and the other one could hang off the other, so they're both, yeah, that's cool, yeah, and just keep going like that, right? So that's the point. So they get bewildered because of this tendency to always start from themselves and analyze from there, and they're very confident of that. They identify with that. So the inductive method for them is actually an identity. So anybody who is like that, they will have problem understanding this Vedic approach, which is deductive. You're starting from the essence, then showing the major principles, then showing the details. Right? It's like that. But that's not how, if one's analyzing and coming up with all these things, do they even, they're trying to get to an essence. Right? They're trying to get to an essence. So then that's the thing, is that they won't get there. Because essence is Krishna. Krishna is the essence.
So Maharaj, it's the problem is mainly, or the situation is mainly a question of identification.
Yes. Yeah.
And if we have the wrong identification in the beginning, our way of thinking is automatically inductive.
Yes.
Automatically.
Yes, automatically. Like that. Because only if you have real identity, you know, as I'm servant of Krishna, then it's everything you analyze will be how it connects to Krishna, how it will be used to please Krishna. Right? We can look at it, analyze how it connects to Krishna, but not necessarily how it pleases Krishna. That'll bring us to the Shanta platform. But when we're thinking about how to please Krishna with that in service, right, that will give you the four higher rasas. Right? But below that, then you will, from your position, see that, yes, all these things connect to the Lord. Rather than from the Lord, it connects down to you. You know, it's just like if we go, yes, I'm here, and then, we're in this area here, you know, we're in this hut, and then from here, we're in Mayapur, and that's in Nadia, and that's in Bengal, and then in Bengal, that's in India, and India, that's in Asia, that's on this planet, and then from there, we're on the Jambudweep, then on Bhumandala, and then like this. It just seems like it's getting better and better as we go. Right? It does. Now, let's do as Srila Prabhupada did with Tamal Krishna Maharaj. What if we start the other way? You know, there's Mahavishnu who's, you know, one quarter of unlimited. Then he breathes out these, you know, universes, right? And then one of these universes, you know, then within that, you know, you have 4 billion miles across. Then there's Brahma. Then you come down, there's 14 planets. We're on one. On that, then you're on this mandala and this and that. And then go, and then sitting here in this room on the floor here, then Samal Krishna Maharaj is thinking he's controlling the universe. When you put it that way, it completely different perspective. So that's the whole point, is if you're a servant of Krishna, that perspective works so well. You're very happy with that because it shows where you are. But if not, then by doing it the inductive, because you started with yourself and then it keeps going, getting bigger and bigger, because you're analyzing, you're connected with that bigger and bigger, you're creating that bigger, so you're bigger. You know, it's just a trick of Maya. So that's why then it's always pointed out that these scholars and that they can't understand these things because of their speculation, because they can't see where they fit in, because they think they are creating the structure, they're creating everything. You know, that's the difficulty. And so that, therefore, Mayaya Pratigyana. Right? Means you could, it's one of four ways to get distracted. But the point is they're one of the major ways. But they're always the ones that think because we're academic we can understand everything. Right? You know, then those who are administrating them because they control everything, then like that, then they completely forget because they think they're too big. Or those who just don't even care about the Lord. You know, he can be there or not, they just don't care because their life is so great. And then you have the person who just doesn't notice anything outside of his day-to-day goings-on. Is that... So these ways of discussion, and that's how they get distracted, because they see these things. I mean, they see in the Vedas, and they don't understand. They say it doesn't make sense. It's not logical. Means, according to starting with myself and applying logic going out from there, it doesn't make sense. And it never will. Because the logic is it starts from Krishna and comes back to us. Right? But in any case, it's just like this. If I want to make someone else tend to be inclined towards my opinion, I have to make any other opinion look bad. You know? It's like this, like here. It's not logical if we accept this, because logic is, everybody thinks logic is a good thing. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you know, I want to put something like, you know, but if we do this, it'll pollute the atmosphere, so pollution's bad. You know, but it may be that, you know, they are living a comfortable lifestyle in the city. You know, but they're very conscious. They took the bus downtown to the march. They didn't bring their own car. You know, I mean, they're not going to ride a bicycle. You know, so, but they don't understand is that their whole lifestyle is exactly opposite of what they're talking about. You know what I'm saying? You know, probably if you check. There's a great majority of those who are worried about the environment and all this who themselves never spend any time out in the environment. They don't go camping. They don't go out. They don't go hiking. They don't. But, you know, it is an overall. Point is it is here. You're supposed to deal. But they're doing it because of health. They're not doing it because this is nature is our mother and we should take care of the mother. That's not the reason. So it's always an ascending thing. You know.
Is it habits?
Yes.
Like habits now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's habits. Yes. And so yes. So the whole point is that you're going to have this structure, and this structure is understood if you understand your relationship with the Lord. Mm-hmm. So the whole Vedic thing will present that. And so people just kind of use it, even though they'll try to speculate within the context of it. But it kind of keeps them still within the Vedic context. But now, when they come in contact with those cultures that are only inductive, and that inductive is only for the spiritual, I mean, for the sensual, then it sounds so great to them. Because they're already smart. Then they're smart within the deductive system, though they're not deductive. They're inductive within a deductive system. So imagine how good they'll be being inductive within an inductive system. Therefore, you see, it's like, you know, the Indian intellectuals and that, they go to the West, they're automatically the best. Just like if you say, okay, some Indian guy is going to America to work in IT. You know, does anybody go, an Indian in IT? What are you talking about? No. That doesn't come up. You know, so it's just, it's understood. They're going to be good. You know? You know, just like, let's say, the guys are sitting around and drinking beer, and then in walks a German guy. Now they know he's going to be better than anybody. Right? Unless, of course, that small, little, skinny, unassuming Czech guy in the corner, you know, is noticed, then they'll know he's better than the German guy. But, yeah. So it's just like that. It's just understood. You know, there's there. So that's the whole thing, is that you could say, but, you know, why is India doing? Because it's just so much easier. It's more self-centered. You don't have the element of sacrifice and giving up and just trying to understand a higher thing. You're just working at a lower level. It's just easy. But in the West, they become proud of their lower level. They don't understand there's beyond that. You know, so that's the point. Is someone in inductive has a problem understanding beyond. So at least they have in the Vedic, they may be working inductively, but they understand, you know, because of the whole deductive presentation about, you know, the piety and this and that and the soul and duties and all that. So they do, and they see the result and they're experiencing it. But then they come across that there's this idea you can get more by using this inductive, and they get easily distracted. Okay. To suggest the unity of statements, the conclusion is indicated in the initial statement, upakrama. Right? So that's the whole point. The initial statement, that's the main thing. It's always given there. The conclusion is always in the initial statement. It's indicated. Then it may be given, once we now understand, it'll be stated again, but in something more clear in how we can practically apply it. Right? That'll be the fifth stage. So the first stage, you know, in the presentation of Adhikarana, is always going to have that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's always like a thesis now.
Yes, it's always. It's always like that. The conclusion, upasamhara, is stated in the following: yach trutayas toayi hi falant yatan tirasanena bhavan nidhanaha. The Shrutis, following their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme, became successful by revealing you as their final conclusion. Right? So that's where you're starting. Then you can get into detail how they came to that, how they understood it. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.41. So let us say we've started with this. They have gone through everything and seen that there's the Supreme Lord, and by that, now they're revealing the Lord as the final, you know, of their study. So now, in that, they're removing things and this and that. So now, in that, then when we get into the middle stage, when we're getting to details, then we're going to see that, you know, things are being analyzed, things are being negated, you know, this is better than this, and these kind of things. That's the point where our conditioning, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, if we have faith in the Lord, then we're going to see those things in that context.
Yes.
But if we don't have faith in the Lord, we're going to see those details on their own, mm-hmm, without the conclusion.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Like you see, is that that you gave a little opening that we're going to discuss this, and it's got these five parts, and so, you know, like that, and then we get into studying one after another. That's pretty common. But if we get into there that this topic is for this particular purpose, and then going down, that people won't do. You know, they may use it in some economic or some other lateral kind of way of thinking. They won't be actually going to a higher conclusions are up.
Yes.
So that's why then the Mayavadis and others, they get into that stuff in the middle.
Yes.
And they try to ignore the two ends. You know.
You get some type of test.
Yeah. Well, it's like having a sandwich. You know, you just take the stuff out of the middle and leave the bread, you know. Like that.
Yes.
You know. So, like that. Madhva's commentary quotes the following Shruti: Na chakshur, na shrotram, na tarko, na smritir, vedo yevainam vedayati. The eye, ear, logic, smriti, and Vedas do not reveal the Lord. Upanishada Purusha, the Lord is revealed by the Upanishads. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.9.26, right? So the Veda doesn't reveal because there they're using the indirect because they're talking about the modes. Yeah, that's it. Trigunya, what is it? Trigunya? Vishaya, Veda, no? Nishtrigunyo Bhavarjuna. So the Vedas are talking about the three modes. So you see they're using the indirect. So the Samhita will always generally be the Samhita, the Brahmanas, those are generally going to be direct. There might be one or two here or there to kind of give the thing, but the majority will be indirect. Right? Then the Aranyakas will go beyond that indirect in, you know, so much in the modes to go back, you know, still within modes, but go back to the metaphysical aspects. You know, so it's kind of like a bridge between the physical aspects and the spiritual. And then the Upanishads will talk about the spiritual. Though even within them, they're still going to use the same method. Predominance is about the direct, but they're going to use indirect. While the Veda will be using predominantly indirect, though it will speak direct. You know, like that. So that's why it said here, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, that the eye, the ear, like means what you see, what you hear, you're using your logic. Your Smriti and Vedas do not reveal the Lord. It is revealed by the Upanishads, right? So then even there is that, if we look at that, so then that means from the Vedas, then you have to understand is through the Upanishads. Then Smriti, also that, then that has to go back to the Upanishads. How will it go back to the Upanishads? Because you're dealing with Smriti. Right? So then from the Upanishads, you get Vedanta Sutra. From Vedanta Sutra, then you'll have the commentary Srimad Bhagavatam. So in other words, Srimad Bhagavatam gives the essence of the Veda and of the Smriti, of Shruti and Smriti. So that's why it's perfect. Right? And the presentation is also in story form that we can appreciate. Does that make sense? Yeah.
And Maharaj, when there are some discussion in, especially you can say in India, so the Upanishad are the main books that people are discussing, no?
If they're working on Gyan, yes, that, and then you'll see Vedanta Sutra.
Yes.
So that's why you see the Acharyas many times, they'll quote back, means they'll either. We see Bhaktivinoda Thakur in some of his work, he just quotes from Veda, from the Upanishads. In other works we see is they'll quote the Veda, then they'll quote the Vedanta Sutra, like this, or the other way, then they'll go down into the Smriti, like that. So they'll show it on all levels. So the point is we can discuss. That's why when the Brahmins said, okay, you can't speak on, you know, using Bhagavatam as your evidence. And you say, fine, you have to do this, that. He says, only the four Vedas. And he said, fine, because they'll use Upanishads. Like that. Then they said, okay, we're counseling this program. Vriti. In the next two Anuchedas, it is established that the Vedas ultimately conclude in Bhagavan. Even if the verses describe Bhagavan, because the import of the words of Shruti is always Bhagavan, the Lord, along with his transcendental qualities. Anucheda 115. Shruti speak of Brahman, but even those that speak of Brahman ultimately indicate Bhagavan. Yeah, because otherwise, where does the Brahman come from? You know. Like if I start to talk about the light, I am indicating the light bulb. Though I may not be directly discussing it. The world is understood to be Brahman since it remains after destruction of the universe. Just like earth remains after pots are destroyed, since Shrutis accept that creation and destruction arise from Brahman, but after advocating Brahman, the Shrutis maintain that the import of words and focus of the mind is in you, Bhagavan. When men place their feet on earth, is it illusory? Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.15, Vriti, BBT purport. There may be some doubt as to whether the Vedic mantras are unanimous when identifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After all, some mantras state, Indra yato vashishtasya raja. Indra is the king of all moving and non-moving beings. Rigveda 132.15. While others say, Agnir amurdha divaha. Agni is the chief of the heavens. And yet other mantras point to different deities as the absolute. It would seem then that the Vedas present a polytheistic worldview. Answering this doubt, the Vedas themselves explain in this verse that there can only be one source of universal creation called Brahman, or Brihat, the greatest, which is the singular truth underlying and pervading all existence. No finite deity like Indra or Agni can fulfill this unique role. Nor would the Shrutis be so ignorant as to propose such an idea. As indicated here by the word Twayi, Lord Vishnu alone is the absolute truth. Indra and other demigods may be glorified in various ways, but they possess only those powers Lord Sri Vishnu has granted them. The Vedic sages understand that this entire world, including Indra, Agni, and everything else perceivable by the eyes, ears, and other senses, is identical with the Supreme Truth, the Personality of Godhead, who is called Brihat, the greatest, because he is Avasesha, the ultimate substance that remains. From the Lord, everything expands at creation, and into him, everything dissolves at annihilation. He exists before and after the material manifestation as the constant basis, known to philosophers as the ingredient cause, Upadana. Despite the fact that countless manifestations emanate from him, the Supreme Lord exists eternally unchanged. An idea the Shrutis specifically emphasize here with the word avikritat. So even it's indicating others, but the point is, where does Indra get his power? Because Indra is finite. So that means the position of being Indra. If there's 14 Indras in a day of Brahma, right? Means if there was one Brahma Indra, you know, for a longer time, then they could get really proud. But they get proud enough, and they're 14 of them in one day. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say you have, the king is there, and the king has his ministers, right? And let's say, you know, how you say, you have your, let's say, home minister or something, you know, because they take care of the state. So in that sense, they're the a senior minister, right? And so it's a very powerful position and everything like that, and we see they become very proud and stuff like that. So in the 12-hour period, there'll be 14 of them. So that basically means everybody, all the ministers, you know, they get to do that for, 50 minutes.
Yes, yes.
So how proud can you get? You know, so like that. So the point is, but the principle of Indra is always there. There's always an Indra. This one's there, and another. And if there is no qualified jiva, the Lord Himself comes into the Indra. So that means then, technically, the power that is there invested in Indra, then that's actually what makes Indra. And then where does that power come from? Shakti comes from Shaktiman. It just doesn't come from nowhere. Right. Yeah. All this etat is understood, upalabdham, to be Brahman, Brihat. How is that? It is what remains of the universe, vikritehe. How is this? It is like earth. What is seen as the remainder of pots is seen to be earth. Brahman is like that. Because yata, the Shrutis accept avayanti, the creation and destruction, udyastamayau, of the universe to be caused by Brahman. Yato va imani. The Bhutani's there. Yato va imani bhutani. From that Brahman came all beings. Taittiriya Upanishad. Therefore, Brahman is compared to earth. How is it that Brahman does not change by this process? Its nature is to be without change, avikritat. It does not change because of the achintya shakti. Shrutestu shabda mulatvat. The defects of the agent do not apply to Brahman because of scriptural statements, which are the only proof concerning inconceivable subjects. Brahma Sutra 2.127. Right, so one has to understand that there is inconceivable, because if you're talking about unlimited, it's beyond our conception. I mean, we can kind of allude to the idea, but we don't. You can't actually accommodate it. So that means it's going to be inconceivable. So being inconceivable, how do we understand inconceivable when it's beyond our actual ability? So that is the scriptural statements. So without scriptural statements, we cannot understand what is inconceivable. Right? So it's through them that we're able to appreciate. So then one has to accept that. So then they describe that the Brahman, everything's based on Brahman, but Brahman is unaffected. Brahman's still Brahman. Just like earth is still earth, even you make it into a pot. So it's just earth, it's earth. You make it into a pot, it's earth. The pot's destroyed, it's still earth. So there's no change. Earth is unchanging. But they're taking these forms that you put it into a form, it's changed. But no, the nature of earth is still exactly the same. So Brahman is still Brahman. Does that make sense? So through the energy, so the potency in earth is able, you were able to make a pot. If it didn't have that potency, how can you make a pot? So that you can make all these forms and all that, which are, it is transformation, but that means then there must be Shakti that is transforming. Otherwise, then how is it working? Though the Brihat is said to possess Shakti, it is here presented as Brahman, since it is not described in this verse with qualities of Bhagavan manifested. Right? So there are qualities, but they're not as such manifested because of the Bhagavan is who manifests. But the qualities are there in their impersonal, because Brahman is impersonal. So the qualities are also impersonal. You know, just like earth is impersonal. And then you can make a pot. You know, which is seemingly personal. Then it can go back into the impersonal. But the point is where does earth come from? That comes from the Lord. Right? Or the earth, let's say, comes from Brahman. So the same way, Brahman comes from the Lord. So this whole thing is that is energies, but they're not manifested as separate energies because it's impersonal. So as Bhagavan, the energies are manifest, you know, specifically. Does that make sense? So, yes.
So can we say that when the feature of Bhagavan is manifested, it's through his energy they reveal his qualities, and then we can see that it is actually personal but not general.
Mm-hmm.
Can we say like that?
Yes, but that's by the will of the Lord.
By his Icha Shakti.
Yes, but his Icha Shakti means his will, and then the Shakti carries it out. So the point is he's a person whether we see or not.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes revealed to us his personal nature or anything, you know, anything that you want to know, it's through his potency that it's revealed. Right. So then, because Brahman, it doesn't have these specific Shaktis, you know, individually acting. Therefore, is then that transformation, then they're able to take on, and everything here is created by the Lord's will. But that's why you have the formal cause is the internal potency. Then you're going to see the manifestation as the external potency. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the original will be Krishna, then his internal potency. And from that, then you'll get the external, that transformation. So it's a fine point, is that Brahman has qualities, but they're non-different. You know, so when they're non-different there, they'll be impersonal. Well, yes. Krishna, him and his energies are non-different, but they're personal.
Yes, yes.
Right? So therefore you see the individuality. While in Brahman, the energy is there, but it's impersonal, so you don't see the individuality.
Yes.
But the potency is there. Otherwise, how is it that you have the material world manifest? It's manifest because, you know, it's energies. So Brahman doesn't change. So it's inconceivable. So that's the point, is these points of discussion are inconceivable. So because scripture says, therefore we accept. You know, you can say, oh, that's blind, but the point is if a blind person can't see, he has to take, you know, others' opinion, you know, others' input. So the point is it's not blind following, because the point is you are blind. They're taking, no, I can see. No, you can't. Inconceivable, you can't see. You're blind to inconceivable. Therefore, it has to be revealed.
By someone who can see.
Yes, by someone who can see. So that's the element. Because we're always so proud that I can do everything myself.
Yes.
Just to conclude, means that it is clear for me, then we're saying that Brahman is changeless.
Yes.
His qualities are changeless.
Yes.
But by the transformation of the energy, those qualities are sometimes manifested and sometimes are not manifested.
Yes. Yeah. Because the point is they're changing from having that transcendental quality, because in Brahman it'll be transcendental. It'll be transforming into, you know, what will be considered here, the temporary. You know, like that. Still Brahman, but it has the temporary manifestation. So, but that's being controlled by his internal potency. They're taking. So Mahamaya is there, she's controlling. Then she takes the position, Yogamaya then takes the position of Mahamaya and controls that energy. So that's the thing. There's all kinds of these inconceivable things. You can present them logically, but it doesn't mean by logic you can understand them. Because we're expecting, no, it'll be logically presented, and because I'm logical, I'll understand it. But no, you can present it logically, but you can't understand the inconceivable through logic. But it can be presented logically. Yes.
Also, because last week we had a lot of discussion on logic.
Yes.
So I was thinking that usually what people do is that they project their own logic.
Yes.
On philosophy.
Yes.
But if we look closely, we see that the Shastra has logic.
Yes.
And as a general thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then each book has its own logic.
Mm-hmm.
So if we understand that and follow Shastra's logic, then everything is revealed. Otherwise, we enforce our own logic on the scripture and we can't understand. We think it's, yeah, not that we think, we actually say, wow, this is illogical.
Yes,
but
yes.
Actually, it's not.
No, no. And all that logic, even though it's individualized logic from each book, the point is they're all aspects of the one singular logic. So that's the point. Everything being Krishna is one logic. But it has different aspects, because when you apply the logic in a different way, you give it a different name. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's just there's going to be a difference in how you apply. Like, let's say I'm putting some spices into the ghee. So if I put them in whole, I'm going to deal with them in one way. If I put them in as powder, I'm going to deal in another way. If I put them in as a paste, I deal with another way again. But the principle is the same. It's still the same spices, the same process, just that how they're going to, by doing those things, how they're going to interact with the ghee, the same principle, you're going to get them all roasted. But whole, you have to wait, put them in long time in the ghee for them to work. Right? Powder is just an instant. More than that, they burn. And if it's paste, then you also, it takes a long time. You know, you have to constantly stir and all that until the ghee and the spices separate, because then they've actually become roasted. Because when there's water, nothing gets roasted. Right? But by cooking it like that, the water goes, and then it cooks, it fries. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's the same thing, but each one of them you may give a different name. You know, to indicate the application. Just like, let's say, we have the chants, you know, that's in the beginning, but the same spicing done at the end, then it will have a different name. Right? So, like, in Bengali, they call it sambar. So, interesting, in South, then you have sambars, because that's the one that you make the chants at the end and put it on. So, you put the sambar at the end, so it's called sambar. Because other things, you put it in the beginning. Right. Does that make sense? You know, rasam, you don't put a sambar. You just put powdered spices and cook it in haribo. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, we get bewildered because of these different names. I remember, maybe it was maybe 2 years ago, when we were, it's like, we were used to, you know, dealing with one topic at a time. And then, you know, you get used to the language and it moves on. Then the next canto, some other aspect is being brought out and all that. Then when we got to 11th canto, then it's starting to bring everything together at once. So you're getting all these ideas that in previous cantos were seemingly contradictory, in 11th canto are not. And so then there was the major problem came up was the usage of the words. Because in our mind, the word meant one thing. And now it's being shown that it can mean a few things. Or it means that one thing you're talking about in that particular situation, but you move the situation, now it's a different word is used. And so then you have it getting used to all the synonyms, and at the same time is learning how which synonym goes in which situation. You know, it's like the kids. They have one word that does everything. Then after a while, they hear the synonyms, but they'll mix them up. They'll use the wrong synonym in the wrong place. So whichever word of the synonyms, kind of they're kind of pleased with, that one's the one that they use. Right? But with time, then they start to see, is this situation use this synonym, and that situation use that synonym. So that's then you can get some maturity in understanding the vocabulary that's used in the discussions of philosophy. But more important is understanding those principles that they're describing.
Yes.
Because if the principle is appreciated, then even you don't catch that synonym, you can just refer to another the other usage of the synonym that they may be used to, and then say it's the same thing.
Yes.
Does that make sense? You know, like if I say, okay, now you do the sambar here. What's a sambar? You know what a chaunce is? Yes. So it's a chaunce at the end. Oh, you know, then, okay. It's easy. Something.
Those who don't cook, they don't know chaunce, sambar, they don't know nothing.
Okay, you put potatoes in a pot, put water, and boil it.
That is understood.
Okay.
Then
put the chunks. Yeah. So then, but what's happening when you're boiling it? It's getting cooked, right? So now let's say there's no water. You just take the same potato, put it in the oven. It's getting cooked. Because you're applying heat. One's a dry heat, one's a wet heat. But in either case, it's heat that's being applied.
It is a principle.
Yes, yes. So then, but then you have to point out, no, you can't boil the bread. Though technically in China they do. To make bread, they don't put it in the oven, they steam it.
Oh, bagels, they also steam.
Oh, really? I know they boil them, but you said they steam. Okay, yeah.
Boil them.
But then afterwards they bake them. But this one, they just boil them and that's it. So I guess you have to make them a little thinner or something. But they do make bread. You can just put a thing, put it, you know, put a rack in there, put it in the thing, put the lid on and just steam it for like 20 minutes and you got bread. Take it out, let it dry out. Because the outside will be a little moist. Inside will be fluffy because of it. And yeah. Yes, now that's the thing. You have to find how the audience will catch it. Yeah.
But it seems, Maharaj, that in order to understand the bhakti, there are many similarities to cooking.
Yeah, because all subjects are connected. That's the whole point, is all subjects are connected.
There are a lot of diversity to understand or to apply.
Yes. Because each situation you're applying in, because it has a specific uniqueness, then even though the principle is the same, the detail will be different. Because
yes.
Otherwise, then you just hear one topic and you know everything.
Yes.
But you hear a new topic and you know what its purpose is, so you know how it connects to Krishna, so now you understand where it fits in the whole body of knowledge. Then you're going to hear is that it has its subsections. So then those subsections, then you understand, okay, those are the major areas. Then you get into the detail, right? But now, how these things work, they're basically the same all the way across. But there'll be a difference of detail from one to the next because there'll be it's a different combination, right? Let's say you have the one entity, and then from there you have so many different aspects. But they're all connected there. So now if I take one of those connecting aspects, it's a particular combination of qualities that makes it unique.
Yes.
Then within that, when I break it down, it's going to also have unique subheadings.
Yes.
But at the same time, that principle of subheadings is the same for all of them.
Yes.
And the principle of details is the same. At the same time as they're all working with the same, you know, basically same energy, the Surup Shakti, but different transformations. So you have different combinations. But once you understand the principles, then you can make anything work.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
You know. Otherwise, how are they dealing?
Yes.
You know. Does that make sense? So, just as let's say somebody knows, like we're saying, cooking, and then within cooking. They understand all the techniques that can be used, and then what spices can do what, and this and that, and those combinations. Then they can create recipes, right? But they're creating these recipes, but that fit within the natural laws of how cooking works. It's you know, they may be revealing something new, but it's not that they're technically creating something. We like to say that because it's there. They're just revealing or manifesting something that's already there, because you can't do something that's against the laws of nature, right? And so then, I mean, technically only seemingly, what do you call it? Yogis could do that, right? Because one of the mystic cities, you can do that, do something that's seemingly against nature. But we never see yogis cooking, so it won't happen, right? So in this case, So, and I doubt somebody will get to that point of having that mystic city and then he'll come to Paris and become a chef. No, I won't. So, how do you say? Yeah, so as you make, in the same way as they can do it there, the same principle is there between the subjects. Just like you can do that in one cuisine, you can do that in someone else, another cook's doing it in another cuisine. But at the same time, as you can understand the principle of the cooking, you can understand both cuisines. Right? So it always goes back. So when you understand Krishna, you understand everything. That's why it's said, you know Krishna, you know everything. But we look at it from the inductive. No, he's just one thing. What about everything else? No, everything comes from him. You know him. And how he likes to do things, that's how you know everything. You know, you can't know the unlimited detail, but you understand the principles on which everything is functioning. And if you understand the principles, you actually understand the subject. Right? You know, it's just like someone may understand the principles of cooking and they can cook. Someone else has gone to the school and knows all the fancy names and this and that and all the different things and who brought out what technique and in what year and in which city and this and that, but it's not necessarily he's a good cook. You know?
They should work as a team. One explains theory, one shows the work.
Yes. They're very good, yeah. Because the one doesn't want to explain and the other one doesn't want to cook, so. Yes.
So is it right to understand that it's only one energy and it's according to function internal, external and marginal?
Yes, it's only one energy. But that doesn't mean it's all one.
And that's the inconsolability part.
Yeah, because it's separate from Krishna. And so because it's separate, it's simultaneously one with Krishna because it's non-different from him, but separate, so there's individuality. So then within those energies, then between internal, external, and marginal, there's also uniqueness. So you aren't material energy, external energy, and you'll never become internal energy. So, yeah. And you won't become Krishna either. Yes.
I think in the Bhagavatam itself it explained that there's only one subject that Bhagavatam is talking about, but we know 10 subjects.
Right.
But the 9, they explain the one.
One.
So this
yes.
is the logic.
Yes. And then each one of those 9 has so many details.
Yes.
Like that. Yes. So that's then what we're talking about here. Yes, exactly. Do we do, though, the Brihat is said to possess Shakti?
No.
Okay. Though the Brihat is said to possess Shakti, it is here presented as Brahman, since it is not described in this verse with qualities of Bhagavan manifested. Right? Because when we say the quality, we expect that it's manifest.
Yes.
The quality's there, but it's unmanifest. It's impersonal.
Yes.
Right? It is not possible to present Brahman with no Shakti at all, since it would become most insignificant. Thus, in the context, the Lord is addressed as Brahman, and here in the example of Earth, agency of Brahman is not established, since Brahman has no action. Right? So then Krishna is the one who's doing it. It's coming from Brahman, but it's Krishna who's acting through his energies. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the fun part. That's why Brahman has to be explained in context of Krishna. But Paramatma, you can explain Paramatma because it's a partial, localized manifestation of Krishna. It means it's here, a specific thing, and all the things of God you can understand in this one, localized. But for that full manifestation, that's Bhagavan. Does that make sense? But so you'll see in Paramatma Sandarbha, it doesn't have to always be connecting it back to Bhagavan. But in the Bhagavat Sandarbha, about Brahman, it always has to be connecting back to Bhagavan. Because any action of Brahman is being done by Bhagavan. Because Brahman is unchanging, doesn't do anything. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, let's say you have a huge godown full of all kinds of stuff. But stuff is coming in and out of the go-down. But the go-down is the go-down. The go-down, it's unchanging. Does that make sense? But there's some out is coming in and doing all this. So as Bhagavan, then these things is going on. That's why we say he's creating. But it's all on the basis, it all is Brahman. It's all created from Brahman. But it's Bhagavan who's arranging all that. Because Brahman is him. But though Brahman is presented, Bhagavan is ultimately the conclusion. That is explained next. After expounding about Brahman, Ataha, the Vedas, Rishayaha, indicate that the import of words and concentration of mind is in you, Bhagavan. Because Brahman and Bhagavan are one entity, difference being produced by manifesting or non-manifesting qualities. Artantara Nyasa is given to illustrate this. Men do, seeing or not seeing Brahman, place their feet on the earth or not. Certainly their feet reach the earth. Right. So that they're how you say? They're standing on the earth, so even though they may or may not understand, that's where they're situated. Right? So they're standing on Brahman, but they don't know, understand that. I mean, that's on Krishna, so they're standing on Krishna. The goal of jnana, fixed in my expansion, is Brahman. Beyond the gunas and the goal of bhakti are actually only one goal, which is known by the word Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:32-32. Right? So it's actually only one goal. So those who understand Brahman beyond the gunas but don't understand Bhagavan haven't really understood what it means to be beyond the gunas.
Yes.
You know, where's the origin of everything? Because they're only getting a partial. Right? If someone only has a partial understanding and someone has a full understanding, you can't say that they're two different things. Right? Like one person knows a whole range of cuisine and the other person only knows how to boil potatoes. You know, or let's say they know how to turn on the hot water, you know, machine so they can then pour it on their noodles. Right? And so like that. So you can't, but then you can't say as, but you know, you're attached to your noodles and all that, but it's that, oh, it's separate from the other. No, it's just a partial manifestation of the whole cooking process.
Yes.
It means the person who can do all the cooking can also, you know, boil water and pour it on top of noodles.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So, because otherwise, you know, if we take it here, the goal of jnana fixed in my expansion of Brahman beyond the gunas and the goal of bhakti are actually one goal, which is known by the word Bhagavan. Because then we think, oh, okay, then Brahman being absorbed in Brahman is okay. But that's like, it means, why would you be absorbed in Brahman when there's Bhagavan?
Yes.
It's the same goal. It's just one is that. You know, somebody learns that, then from there you can take them further in cooking.
Yes.
Means that's the first position that they'll know. You heat the water, you get dinner. You get some tea, you know. I think that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot more you can do with that. But whatever.
Keep stuck.
Huh?
It's just stuck.
I mean, it keeps you from dying, right? Yeah. Shruti, to prove this, is given in Madhva's commentary. They call the Lord by all names. Just as rivers, taking shelter of the ocean, flow to the ocean, all names indicate the Lord. So all these rivers, in fact, the names of rivers, they actually indicate the ocean. Because they're all going to the ocean. And they've come from the ocean. All rivers have come from the ocean and go to the ocean. But we think that there's something separate from the ocean. But without the ocean, there wouldn't be the river. And the goal of the river is getting to the ocean. All rivers everywhere go to the ocean. Does that make sense? You know. Or if not, then if it's, you know, like maybe the, what is it, Ariel Sea or Ariel Sea? Ariel? There's a sea kind of out in somewhere, Central Asia kind of thing. Huge sea, now it's kind of dried up.
Yes.
How do you say it?
It has its own name. Yeah, it's like a lake, actually.
Yeah, it's a very big, but it's so big they call it a sea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's bigger or as big as the Black Sea or Caspian Sea or
these,
so they're inside. So lakes are going, but then they're being there, then they'll evaporate and become other and then go to the ocean. So eventually they're all from the ocean. How do you say it?
Yeah. Ariel, I don't know.
Okay.
Araiska.
Oh, so when it goes into English, then it becomes Ariel.
Yeah.
Something. Okay.
It almost dried up.
Hmm?
It almost dried up now.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it's Yeah, you see pictures of it. There's this sand and boats sitting in the sand.
It's pretty cute.
Yeah. Like that. Anucheda 116. All the scriptures describe you alone by direct words, abhidhana, or as the ultimate meaning, tat parya, either as Brahman, Bhagavan or Brahman. That is true, not imaginary. Right, so they're going to, so if you establish, if you understand that Brahman and Bhagavan are the same, so that everything is describing Krishna as Bhagavan. Even if it's describing Brahman, Brahman is still describing Bhagavan. It's the feature of Bhagavan. It's not separate. O master of Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, therefore the wise get rid of all misery. The wise get rid of all misery by diving deep into the nectarian ocean of your topics, which wash away all the contamination of the universe. Then what to speak of those who having by spiritual strength rid their minds of bad habits and freed themselves from time, are able to worship your true nature, O Supreme One, finding within it uninterrupted bliss. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87:16. Yeah. So, just by hearing about the Lord, you're removed of all impurities. That situates you on the transcendental platform. But even more than that are those who are able to then worship the Lord. Right? So Bhagavan is beyond. O Master Brahma and Shiva, their source is the Purusha called Narayana. Narayana's master is Bhagavan Krishna, since his Sarup is superior. O Lord of all lords, since, E.T., the direct meaning and conclusion of the Vedas is you, persons who have discrimination, Surayaha, reject those parts of the Vedas which do not present you as the final goal. They submerge themselves in the ocean of nectar of your glories, which destroy all suffering in the world. Serving you with faith, they give up all austere actions or give up karmas because they are painful. So they're serving the Lord. So all these other, they give up karma and jnana because it's not directly talking about the Lord. So those activities and knowledge that are directly talking about the Lord and everything in context of the Lord, that's then what they absorb themselves in. So the purpose, if the conclusion of the Veda is this direct, by taking up the direct and not worrying about the indirect aspects, you know, in the context of karma and jnana, you know, karma, kanda, jnana, upasana, like this, then they just worship the Lord. So they're not leaving anything, because the conclusion of all that is the Lord anyway.
And this is a recommended process.
Yes, yes. That's why you see is, you know, we just focus on Bhagavatam. We don't worry about all these other things, really. So, you know, means we can see everything else, but in that context. So we're not missing anything. We're not applying something, because if everything is there, then it'd be just like, let's say, if you're doing postgraduate work in mathematics, does that mean that you're ignoring the third grade textbook? No. It's a detail that's for third graders. You know? So you already have the conclusion, so then what's the problem? If the sadhakas have this nature, what to speak of persons who have conquered the antakarna, ashaya, the influence of time. Oh, ashaya. Because asha means desire, no? So the antakarna, the subtle body, is about desire. Interesting. Ashaya. The influence of time. Okay. Have conquered the antakarna, ashaya, the influence of time, the cause of old age, and the three gunas. Those persons who worship Brahman, your position of unlimited happiness. They submerge themselves in your topics and give up all austere karmas and also give up dedication to experiencing Brahman. Like, there's no need to experience Brahman. It's not about the eternal. It's about Krishna. He is eternal. Does that make sense? Krishna is eternal. So if you're just trying to appreciate the eternal aspect, well, what about the whole about Krishna the person? Because he's eternal, but that's not the important part. So someone who's absorbed in Brahman, they're just interested in the eternal aspect. Does that make sense? This is what is said. There are three types of people: the fool, the wise man, and the successful man. Taking everything together, the Vedas indicate Bhagavan as a real entity. If you were not actually existent, then, because the non-existent cannot destroy all sins, Akila Loka Mala Kshapana. Topics of Bhagavan and the Vedas would not be famous for destroying sins of even fools devoid of philosophical knowledge. It would be like iron having no power to burn without contacting fire. Moreover, if Bhagavan were false, the wise would not indulge in his topics. It is like saying a barren woman is fertile. They would not give up their dharmas to become absorbed in his topics. It would be like going to some other Tirtha and hearing that the king is as great as the Ganga. Those who have attained success, being Atmaramas, would not become absorbed in the Lord's topics, since they would not respect such false topics. Those who bathe in a lake of nectar would not give that up and instead go to a river with imaginary greater qualities. Right? So, because they're Atmarama, they're absorbed in the Lord because of the position. So we see the fool or the karmi, then he is being absorbed in the Lord. He's becoming freed of all sin. Right? He's becoming purified. Right? And then those who are the philosophical knowledge is that's working because it's connection with Bhagavan. Like iron is connected with fire, so it becomes like fire. And so then the Atmaramas, then they're absorbed because of the transcendental nature of the Lord. So that means it's beyond the transcendental nature of just Brahman. So that's why then for all these three types of people, the fool, the wise man, and the successful man, then they're all absorbed in the Lord. All of them, their perfection comes from being absorbed in the Lord. You can, but it's also you have those, the jnani, who have come to the Atmarama position. And then they become devotees. So in other words, the Atmaramas will become devotees. But they could also, like the four Kumaras, they weren't in the beginning. But it's the natural position to come to that. But yes, you could also say like that. The qualities of the Lord's topic are described. Hanti kalusham shrotram sa yato harihi. The Lord, the object of hearing, destroys sin. Vishnu Purana. When a person realizes you, he no longer cares about his good and bad fortune, arising from past pious and sinful acts. Since it is you alone who controls his good and bad fortune, such a realized devotee also disregards. Such a realized devotee also disregards what ordinary living beings say about him. Every day he fills his ears with your glories, which are resided in every age by the unbroken succession of Manu's descendants, and thus you become his ultimate goal. You are the shelter of even liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87-40. Right? He's not worried about his good and bad fortune arising from past pious or sinful activity, because Krishna alone controls his good and bad fortune. Like that. So if one's absorbed in Krishna, then good and bad, all that's all taken care of. Like that.
So this is a question of realization.
Yes, yes.
Liberation is not there, it's so
yeah, but that's why then if you're worried about it, then you can connect those things to Krishna.
Yes.
So that's the point. At some point, then you're not worried about it, because if you're absorbed in Krishna, then these things are taken care of.
Yes.
Sukadeva, the son of Vyasa, whose mind became distracted from trance by the qualities of Krishna, who became attracted to the Vaishnavas, studied this great Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.11. Therefore, the natural relationship of the Lord of the Vedas, which describes his qualities, is established everywhere. Om Yasya Jananto Nama Chit Viviktana Mahaste Vishno Sumatim Bhaja Mahe. O Vishnu, your name is spiritual and self-revealed. Knowing that name a little, not even completely, chanting impurely, we have attained fine intelligence about you, because that name, Om, is perfect in itself. Rig Veda 156.3. Needs another number. So here's what we're saying. Within the Veda, it has these concluding points that people may not catch them. Just like in Mahabharata, 25% of it's about the pastimes of the Pandavas, and you know they're connected with Krishna. But then even some of those pastimes, you may not always see Krishna involved. Mm-hmm. So then the tendencies you might not catch about the devotional quality of the devotees, the Pandavas, you know, and about the position of Krishna. And so that's why then it wasn't satisfying to Vyasadeva. Right? So then he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, which is just about Krishna. Right? It's very obvious. Everything's directly in context of Krishna. Right? So the same way as the Veda is also going to be the same. It is also Aparavidya, because it has that same kind of style. It talks about the Lord and the Supreme and the Absolute and gives the conclusions. But because there's so much other volume of work, you know, of different people applying this or not applying this, and, you know, what good results or bad results and different ways that they can connect themselves and engage themselves, connect themselves to the Supreme, then you may miss the actual conclusion. Right? So, here in the Vedas, they're talking about the karmi. He's interested in material benefits. And so, by being absorbed in material benefits, then he can be absorbed in the Veda. And from being absorbed in the Veda, then he can get purified. That will bring him closer to Krishna. Because there's one path. But he may not understand that his ultimate goal is Krishna, even though the Veda is saying that. But he'll only catch those portions that he gets purified.
Yes.
Then with time he gets purified, knowledge and detachment come. Then knowledge and detachment, now then he hears from the Vedas, from the Gyanakanda sections. And then he becomes absorbed in those. Right? But then the point is that this purification is there, but the point is that he has to be in touch with it. And where and how does he become in touch with it? You know, that he's not. Because the point is you're becoming purified, but if you're already Brahman, then if Brahman gets impure, it's Brahman's dealing. Why are you worried about it? You know, and if you're saying you're Brahman, that you're not the whole thing. So the point is the whole thing is not impure. So then it's contradictory even within their own philosophy. So you have to understand the connection to the Lord. Right? And then the Atmaramas, then they're already on the transcendental platform. They're not trying to attain it. They're already there. And being situated there, they can see that topics about Krishna are more tasteful than just the Brahman.
Yes.
If you're just dealing with Sat, dealing with Sat Chidananda is better.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Good. Yeah, so that's the whole point. All these aspects. So then the devotees, then they just turn to those topics that directly deal with the Lord and absorb themselves in that way. And then they're happy. They don't need to go to these others, because anything, but just by hearing about the Lord, you're purified. You know? By hearing about the Lord, then all good qualities come. So whatever is being offered in karma and jnana, those are mechanical. Well, in bhakti, that's natural. Because they're just mechanically trying to bring you to bhakti. So if you're already performing bhakti, you're getting the natural benefit. Does that make sense?
It's included.
It's included. Yeah. All-inclusive package. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada.